the fact that an individual does not put their house up for sale basically causes these ripple effects for other people who depend on the market being liquid. And that certainly can affect people's ability to move to a certain place, to find the right house, right? There may be certain types of housing, as single family housing, may be particularly difficult to obtain. And that's what you certainly need if you want to relocate for a job far away. We think of that as like an important externality, which is why policy should look into it in the first place, is that these are not individual decisions that the individual can resolve. They may actually affect lots of other sellers and buyers.
Welcome to The Ripple Effect, the podcast that takes you on a journey through the minds of Wharton faculty. I'm your host, Dan Loney, and in each episode, we'll be diving deep into the inspiration behind the groundbreaking research that Wharton professors have conducted and exploring how their findings resonate with the world today.
Well, we have seen a very active housing market in the last few years, obviously the impact of the pandemic and now what's going on with the economy. And within the housing market, there's been something called mortgage lock-in. It basically started when we were during the pandemic and we saw interest rates and mortgage rates sink to down around 3%. But then as we've come out of the pandemic and now into the economy, we see now mortgage rates more around 7%. Well, in many cases, people who have that 3% rate don't want to give it up for a new home where they're going to have to pay 7%. And that brings an interesting dynamic to the housing market as we move forward. Pleasure to be joined here in studio by Lu Liu, who's an assistant professor of finance here at the Wharton School. Great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is just, it's such a unique dynamic, I think, when you talk about housing in general, that when this first happened, it almost felt like it was opening a door to opportunity for so many homeowners back a couple of years ago.
So the low rates certainly did, right? So there's an image that's been going around of mortgage lock-in as golden handcuffs. So the fact that you've got a 3% rate locked in is good for you. It's golden, right? It's a golden thing to have. But the issue that we're discussing today is that it also locks you into your current house. So people have not been moving, they've not been selling their house, and that can lead to issues down the line, and as we see today.
And so that can have an impact not only with the individual who owns the home, but when you think about, as you said, them not moving, maybe they're not changing jobs, then that has an impact on the companies that they are either working for or potentially would be working for.
Absolutely. It has an impact on possibly firms and hiring and moving. It also has an immediate impact on the housing market itself. So you, as you know, somebody with a 3% rate locked in, you don't want to put your house up for sale. But actually, the market functions much better when there is a constant kind of coming and going of inventory coming up for sale, so that other people who want to move to where you live can also move there. And so I think the fact that we've not seen that, the fact that housing transactions have basically dropped by 30% relative to last year, housing transactions have fallen off a cliff. They're almost at post-crisis, basically great financial crisis levels, means that new home buyers, as well as people who would like to move, actually also find it very difficult to find a house that's up for sale.
So how do we turn that around and get us back towards a more normal housing market where you have a lot of that transactional movement?
So that's a great question and challenge, I think, for policymakers today. So if you remember, the State of the Union address by the Biden administration actually proposed, because they saw it as such an issue that first-time buyers cannot enter the housing market, they proposed a $10,000 tax credit to people who own starter homes, so defined as people who own relatively low-priced homes in a given county. And when we looked at that proposal, I think one challenge is that there's basically a housing ladder in the housing market. So if you own a starter house and the Biden administration gives you $10,000 to sell it, you need somewhere else to move. You want to buy from someone.
Right.
And that someone is likely, right, if you're moving up, if you're in a starter home and you want to expand your house, you may be moving into a more expensive or a larger house. And so you are likely to buy from someone who's likely also locked in, also got a 3% mortgage, right? And so how are you going to convince them to sell to you? Well, maybe you're going to agree to pay a higher price, right? And so part of that tax credit is going to go to people with larger homes. That's one way to split it. And the other challenge there is that we think $10,000 is probably not large relative to how valuable the low rate is for you. So we estimate that on average, for the average U.S. mortgage borrower, that's about the fact that you've got a 3 or 4% rate locked in on average is worth to you about $50,000. So $10,000 is maybe not enough to convince one person to sell, let alone two. So that's one challenge. Obviously, we're also not saying you should just raise the tax credit and just throw money into the housing market, right? These kind of subsidies can be inflationary by themselves. And so there's an additional challenge with policy trying to stimulate the housing market without causing inflation, which would be entirely counteractive because that would cause rates to stay higher for longer and lock people in for even longer. So that's a real, there's a real policy conundrum.
How much do you think then that the run that we've had on inflation the last couple of years has played a role into this? I mean, obviously, there's the component of the price run-up we've seen in properties over the last couple of years as well. People that, you know, had a house valued at $300,000 pre-pandemic probably saw what, between $50,000 and $100,000, depending on the size of the house, extra value in their home in just a couple of years.
That's right. So that's certainly, there's been pandemic factors in the past that I think have led to an increase in inflation. I think going forward, the policy challenge for instance, monetary policymakers is the idea of raising rates, right? Which is why mortgage rates are so high today. The goal was to dampen inflation.
Yep.
But what we just discussed, these are in the labor market as well as in the housing market, these are actually two factors caused by lock-in that may, if anything, be inflationary, right? We're not putting our houses up for sale. We're also not buying, but I think the lack of liquidity and inventory seems to generate upward price pressures. So house prices have remained really remarkably high, given that rates are so high, as well as, maybe you have to compensate, for instance, firms and workers, right, in order to move. Maybe you have to offer part of the compensation package. You may have to entice someone to pay a bit more. So there's, I think, risks around lock-in where the policy has raised interest rates, but actually there may be effects that are inflationary coming through lock-in.
What's interesting right now is, you know, we're looking at rates at around 7%. And I think people are trying to figure out where that sweet spot is that'll really start to drive a lot of activity. You know, do you need to get rates on average down closer to 6%, 5.5%, whatever that number is, in order to have people thinking, okay, now I feel like that level of value between the mortgage I have and the one I would take is close enough where I don't feel like I'm putting myself in a bind?
That's certainly true. I don't think there's a magic number, even though maybe people have these kind of thresholds in mind, like I'm waiting for it to hit 5%.
Yeah.
What we would say as economists is basically like it's very difficult to time exactly when rates come down and rates, they may stay higher, right? That's been a surprise in the latest inflation news. And so you should make your decisions based on your personal circumstances. And so there's obviously typically there's an option to refinance if rates come down. So that's a way to, if you had to take out a mortgage rate today at higher rates, you can refinance down. Obviously, there's a cost involved with that and you have to make sure there's no prepayment penalty. So that's maybe like more practical advice. But you should definitely not try to time the market. I think that's very difficult to do, given that we don't see a super clear path.
Well, and I guess to a degree, the market that a person is in has to factor in here as well. When you think about, you know, the value of a home in Montana or Utah or North Dakota is going to be a lot different, most likely in many cases, to what, you know, we see here in Philadelphia or New York or Chicago. And that, to a degree, I guess, also brings me to the question about if there is kind of an incentive put forward by the government to try and ease this lock-in, is it better to have it at the federal level, or do you need to have some combination with the state and local governments coming in as well because of that difference in cost and value?
Absolutely. So that's what we're hoping to tackle. And new research is try to kind of model the housing market with this kind of housing ladder and different types of housing and different prices in different regions. So you may have to really finely calibrate any such intervention. An alternative intervention that we also want to highlight and I think promote of going forward is there are actually ways in which you can unlock the market through a mortgage contract. So in some countries, it is actually possible to take your mortgage with you when you're moving.
the rate.
And exactly.
Take the rate with you.
Take the rate, exactly. Take the mortgage and the rate with you. And the friction right now in the US is that basically you as the borrower, you would ideally want to go to your bank and maybe renegotiate and ask them for you to port the mortgage or maybe take some part of the rate,
right.
Keep some of that with you as you're moving. But that's typically not possible because mortgages are securitized and sold to mortgage-backed securities investors. And so you typically end up negotiating with the mortgage servicer. And there's been some evidence following the financial crisis and some kind of case studies these days of how difficult is it. They typically don't have the right incentives to renegotiate with you. There's not that much in it for them.
Right.
And so I think if the government were to step in, it could certainly incentivize, maybe provide some benefits in terms of allowing servicers to renegotiate.
On the component of relocation or the lack thereof because of the mortgage lock-in, where do you think are the biggest impacts that we're seeing?
So in our research, we certainly found that moving far away and across state, actually, if anything, is a little bit more affected by mortgage lock-in. So and that obviously means part of it could be that maybe the benefits of moving far away are a little bit more uncertain. You have to, to maybe take your entire family with you, and there's uncertainty around that. And so giving up something for sure, which is your low rate, for something that's much more uncertain in the future, say a better paid job that's going to pay you a lot more money actually into the full future. But maybe that's difficult to trade off with sort of a certain low rate that you have right now. So that could certainly have medium and longer run effects on productivity, on firms being able to hire the right workers, and obviously the kind of opportunities that people take.
But would you think that like something like around hiring the right workers and that component of lock-in, that we expect this, I guess, to a degree to be somewhat cyclical, that we're going to work our way through this as we move forward, then that potentially the impact in the labor markets with companies, is it the potential of being somewhat cyclical and maybe even a little bit more short term, the impact that you would see with companies and workers?
I mean, if you look at the aggregate data, we don't see a lot of evidence that people have trouble hiring. The labor market has been quite strong. So we haven't seen it in the immediate data. So the kind of question for the economy, whether this will have maybe more medium term detrimental effects, will depend on whether a given worker who's locked in is very difficult to substitute. And that may differ very much across different industries. So maybe you have very, very particular skills, but you're not willing to move, then a firm that really requires your skills will have trouble and may do worse as a result of that. On the other hand, if most people who are locked in can be replaced by people who are renting, people who are still mobile, who don't have a mortgage, then maybe the aggregate effects are a little bit more muted. So that's that. The jury, I think, is very much still out on the kind of labor reallocation.
Does the question around lack of inventory, does that factor into this to a degree as well?
I certainly think so. So I think, as I was saying earlier, the fact that an individual does not put their house up for sale basically causes these ripple effects for other people who depend on the market being liquid. And that certainly can affect people's ability to move to a certain place, to find the right house, right? There may be certain types of housing, as single family housing, may be particularly difficult to obtain. And that's what you certainly need if you want to relocate for a job far away. We think of that as like an important externality, which is why policy should look into it in the first place, is that these are not individual decisions that the individual can resolve. They may actually affect lots of other sellers and buyers.
This may be a hard question to ask because I think a lot of people would say, we've been in this kind of mortgage lock-in now for a couple of years at this point. Is this something that we should expect that is going to have ripple effects longer term in the housing market right now?
Most of these households have locked their rates in for 30 years.
Yeah.
So they can, technically, they could stay in place and keep their 3% mortgage for up to 30 years. And so the potential of having long-run effects is certainly there. And what we've seen over the last year, I think towards the end of the last year, there was a lot of enthusiasm, I think slightly unwarranted, and a push for lower rates, given that inflation had subsided. But I think if anything, some of the markers that we're seeing today may point to some upside risks for inflation. And so I think it's very difficult to predict how long interest rates are going to stay high. And while that's happening, people are basically in this gridlock. They're kind of waiting and maybe kind of not wanting to let go of these currently low rates. And that obviously causes a lot of pent up demand. House prices are high, for instance, in particular for first time buyers and families who want to own a house. That obviously kind of pushes back all of their life decisions in a way, if that really is what's keeping you, what's a big barrier for you to enter the housing market. And so the longer that subsides, every kind of month and year will count, because these are things that are going to, this is going to be like pent up demand and kind of distortionary effects that could be quite large for many people.
And I guess to a degree, it also butts up with the fact that we're in a cycle right now where younger generations weren't looking to buy that. They were waiting longer to buy that first home. So that's the dynamic that probably has factored in a little bit to this as well.
Exactly. So I think that's certainly what people have said, that during the pandemic, there was a lot of people, for instance, like moved in with their parents to actually save for a down payment.
Yeah.
So what people have observed is that there's actually a huge cohort of people who are looking to buy and looking to buy a house for the first time. They're forming a new household because they saved for a down payment, and
sure,
they kind of entered a market that had high prices, high mortgage rates,
yeah,
and low inventory,
yep,
right? And so I think there's a general sentiment that people are upset about this constellation. It's basically like facing a triple set of challenges, which is why I think policy wanted to signal the kind of State of the Union address, I think, signaled that they heard that there were people who were facing these issues. But obviously, yeah, the question is, how do we design these policies to actually be effective?
Great to have you in here. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Lu Liu, who is Assistant Professor of Finance here at the Wharton School. Thank you for listening to The Ripple Effect. If you enjoyed this episode, you can find more insightful conversations by subscribing to the Wharton School's Ripple Effect podcast on your favorite podcast platform.